Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Welcome to Rooted Agritourism. I'm Dr. Liz Fidler-Mergen, owner of Sunny Mary Meadow, a U-Pick flower farm, wedding florist, and event venue in central Minnesota. Our mission is to serve anyone rooted in agritourism, value-added agriculture, and rural entrepreneurship. The people turning ideas and raw products into thriving businesses and experiences. Let's dig in. Hello, and welcome back to an episode of Rooted Agritourism. I'm your host, Liz Fidler-Mergen, and I have got a special guest with me today, Jenny Bredekin from Full Circle Farm. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So when I started making a list of my dream guests and who I was going to have, I knew that when I started making my dream wish list of guests and I mean, trust me, you guys, there's some interesting ones on there. I mean, like Erin Benzikan, like from Florette. Like, why won't she come on the podcast someday? But I had my list and I've got about 60 people on there so far. And I knew that I wanted some very diverse origin stories and different products that aligned and just kind of got people thinking out of the box of ways to make money off of their land. And I realized that actually very quickly I had been following you and then I found your sourdough and we reached out for you to share some within my store. But then I was like, okay, let's chat about this because I have questions on, you know, what your business is. But can you please just introduce yourself, your own words, you know, what's the origin story of your business and tell us a little more about Full Circle Farm.
Thank you so much again for having me. Hi, everybody. My name is Jenny Bredekin from Full Circle Farm. We are a fifth generation small grains farm, mill and micro bakery south of Starbrook, Minnesota, which is West Central. To think back to when it all began, I originally grew up on our family farm south of Starbrook. And in 2011, I moved to Honolulu, Hawaii to pursue a nursing career. I didn't know anybody when I moved there. It was totally like, jump off a cliff, let's do this. And 2 years later, I met my now husband, Roscoe, and he is my co-partner in our farm. And he originally is from Honolulu. He's born and raised, so island boy. And I can honestly attribute our whole farm idea, essentially, from seed to slice with the sourdough because of his passion for just fermentation in general. When I met him, he had this whole fermentation station on his counter. It evolved into sourdough bread. And really the first time that our eyes were essentially open to the power of taking something so simple as a grain of wheat and turning into incredible bread is when we were actually visiting our family farm in Minnesota during a winter time. And he was so bored out of his mind. He's like, I need to do something to occupy myself. My grandpa had just a couple months prior harvested wheat and it was sitting in the grain bin. And he was like, well, what if I buy a countertop mill and then make our own flour and then I can try and make sourdough with this flour that I make. And I'm like, I've grown up on this grain farm my entire life, and I don't think it's that simple. And sure enough, he gets a countertop mill and he makes this flour literally by putting grain in the hopper and it grinds it. It's a stone mill and it turns it into flour. And I'm like, it's a lot more simple than I thought it would be. And he makes this incredible, it was the best tasting bread I'd ever had. Mm-hmm. And literally it's the fresh milled flour, water, salt. That's all that went into this loaf. And this is probably 2014. And We bring it over
to well before the sourdough craze.
Well before, yeah. So he brings it over to my grandpa, and my grandpa takes a slice of it and butters it up. And it was the first time, I get goosebumps talking about it actually, it was the first time in his whole farming career that he had ever tasted the fruits of his labor. And he had been farming for 60 years. And I think that that is just an analogy for how, not to generalize or overgeneralize, but I think that there's just this real deep disconnect from the valuable resource, such as grain is one example of this, which Minnesota is one of the best places in the world to grow small grains.
Yep.
You know, everybody grows it, commodity farms, but we are so disconnected as to what a valuable resource it is. And that is our purpose. That is our mission with Full Circle Farm, is to reconnect people to this valuable resource that we all just seem to kind of overlook.
Okay, I'm tearing up. Like, that is a powerful story, but that is so cool. Like, that is so cool. But think about it. How many farmers probably have never tasted what they have grown, and they're so used to just, well, you sell it to the elevator. You sell it
for dirt cheap, and that's just what you do.
So what was your aha moment? And I'm guessing, I mean, that was your aha moment.
That was a big aha. I was like, wow, that was a lot more simple than I thought it would be.
Yeah. Yep. But you didn't immediately like, oh, we're going to move. And you were just visiting.
Oh, yeah. We were just visiting. I never thought.
You were not going to move back.
No,
no. I mean, no offense, but really, you were in Hawaii and you came back to Minnesota. Oh,
I get that question all the time.
But I mean, that grain of wheat made you come back.
That grain of wheat, like literally our purpose-driven business is what made us come back to want to make a difference. So essentially what started it was that, obviously, and Roscoe, my husband's passion for sourdough, just grew and grew and grew. And he was just making so much of it. And everyone is like, Roscoe, you're really, really good at this. Like, can we buy some bread from you? Mm-hmm. And he is the most humble person you will ever meet. And he just didn't want to sell it. And meanwhile, marketing mindset, I'm like, this is something. Like, you know, and the farmers markets in Honolulu, we didn't know at the time what it would grow into. But I'm like, hey, maybe we should start doing a farmer's market. Like, that'd be a really good place to start. Yep.
In Honolulu.
Yep. And so we got, you know, luckily we were living in a space at the time that we could kind of transition into a micro bakery. It was a small workshop space, essentially like a garage. And we got the ovens and the cooling racks. And
does Hawaii have cottage food laws similar to Minnesota, like home baker?
So everything that we sold was direct to the consumer. That's the way that we were able to do it at home.
Yep. And so if you're listening and you're brand new to this, most states probably have some sort of, in Minnesota, it's called cottage food licensing, where you can sell directly to consumer as long as it's direct, not to a store that sells to consumer wholesale for that.
Yeah, good side note. Yep. Mm-hmm. So we were working under what is the equivalent of the cottage food law here in Minnesota. And we did one farmer's market. Well, I was still working my nursing job at the time. And he, so uncomfortable with sales and like putting himself out there, but I just really encouraged him. And the first farmer's market was a real hit. And then that started the weekly farmer's markets.
And what was he doing?
He was working construction.
Got
so
it.
He is retired from construction, which is a real dream for me because he has all the skills.
Yeah.
So he was just doing this kind of on the side. Fast forward, I'm at an intersection where I'm ready to quit my nursing job. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, hey, I need X amount per week. Do you think we can do it? We laugh at that now because we were like, wow. Like, we had no idea how much that would have surpassed. Because when you've only ever worked a job, you get a check, right? You get this set amount. And
you trade your time for money.
You trade your time for money. And I had never owned my own business before. I've always had a very entrepreneurial spirit. So it makes sense that this is what happened. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's funny now looking back at that. So we evolved into doing two farmers markets a week. We did the Honolulu farmers market every Saturday and the Kailua farmers market, which is on the windward side of Oahu, every Sunday. So we worked together, and that was in 2019. And shortly after we started full time with the two of us, we got a feature in Forbes
because one of their writers was a loyal customer of ours at the time. And she loved the story of we were shipping grain from our family farm in Minnesota to Honolulu to mill fresh so that we could partially use some of our flour.
Yep.
And then we have a legacy loaf, which is 100% whole wheat flour. Mm-hmm. So she and, you know, when we shared our story with our customers, they also too, you know, coming from Hawaii, many of them are originally from there or never are from, they hadn't been familiar with what a grain farm is or what even wheat looks like.
Yeah.
Like I would take a cup of wheat to the farmer's market and they're like, that's what it looks like. And just to connect the dots for people is monetarily worth so much more. When you think about adding value to your business, it's not just money. It's like, what can you contribute to you with your story, with your passion? How are you inspiring people to like live their best potential for this lifetime? And I think that that is what really inspired people and want, like people wanted to support us. And it grew and grew and grew.
Yeah.
And we finally hit a point. We had that micro bakery business from 2019 to 2023. So about exactly 4 years. And we just decided to, you know, why are we continuing to ship this grain? Like, why don't we just move this operation onto the farm and root it in community, root it in sustainable agriculture, and not only for the benefit of us, like, but for the benefit of the agritourism movement.
I feel that so much because with my flower farm, Sunny Mary Meadow, I have supporters all over the Midwest and the U.S. And they're like, can you mail your flowers to me? And I'm like, it kind of defeats the purpose. And you probably were like, this is so cool, but this is, you're shipping it. It's sort of defeating the whole mission a little bit. It's the whole local, you know.
But that support is so heartwarming. And I had never felt anything like it before. And I'm like, you guys don't even really know me. It's such an incredible feeling. Mm-hmm. And so if anyone is listening right now that has been a huge supporter, I just want to extend my heart out to you and say thank you so much for being a part of our journey. It's been a wild ride.
Okay, so pause break in the middle of this episode and then we're going to get back to it. But full disclaimer, this is the first interview that I'm doing with my first guest for the new podcast, for the new rebrand. And this is exactly what I had in mind. I realized that not everyone has the desire to start their own podcast, right? But there are so many farmers out there that I just want to like give you the opportunity to like reach your customers directly. And like my dream and vision is that like this gets embedded on your website and your backstory and whatever. And like, oh, this connection. And I'm feeling really good right now. Okay. So then you decided to move back 2023-ish. Yep. And then what?
May of 2023, we had our first daughter, Poppy, in August. And I was really excited to also have the ability to do what I wanted to do with our land. So I've dabbled with cut flowers. I've done flower subscriptions. And it's just that piece of inspiring people with beauty. I know you feel it.
Yep.
Like the flowers are powerful. Like I get goosebumps too, just talking about that. So it was a leap. We knew that it was going to be significant for us going from the farmers markets at the time.
Like how much were you selling at those farmers markets? I mean, just for reference.
Completely transparent. We were making $4,500 a week.
Yeah.
And that was, I had never made that much money before.
Yeah.
We were super comfortable. And now we are making maybe a third of that now, 2 years in. But again, there's so much in life. I feel like there's money, there's the value of the monetary value, but then there's like lifestyle and being able to like have slow mornings with my kids and to be able to have the land around us and have the valuable resource of that. And so we started again, like pretty much exactly from scratch. We sold all of our equipment in Honolulu. We came home with a pallet full of stuff and started from square one. And we started working under the cottage food law here in Minnesota. And everything that we sold for the first year and a half, I would say, was directly to our consumer. We tapped into wholesale market starting in January of this year. So we've been going for a little over 6 months now. So in order to tap into that wholesale market, we need to have a commercial space or be working out of a commercial space, which is essentially there's an inspector that comes in and just makes sure that everything is clean, etc. This has been one of our biggest hurdles. We've been baking professionally now for 6 years. And because now we live in such a rural community, it is so difficult to find a commercial kitchen to work out of. So that's why we're building our own. We are in the process of getting the ball rolling on our, it's going to be Minnesota's very first vertically integrated farm, mill, and micro bakery, meaning that we're taking the simple ingredient of wheat and we are making a final product with it. So that will be Minnesota's first. But not only that, we see this barrier being such a hindrance for the potential of other businesses that are working under the cottage food law but want to tap into wholesale markets. So we, in our business plan, have included the ability for people to come in and rent out the commercial kitchen space.
I love that. My farm store is getting built. My farm store, workspace, floral cooler, event space. And I want, so I'm that's one of the reasons I reached out to you, because I knew that you had the commercial, the wholesale opportunity. And because there are some people that sell sourdough in this area, but they would have to physically be there. And I do have someone that's making jams and jellies, but again, she rents out a commercial kitchen. I believe it's in Albany. But yeah, that is such a barrier. And people are like, can I sell my stuff in your store? I'm like, unless you're physically there. And then it's two different, like the logistics of they have to pay that person directly and pay my farm. And it's, you know, there's a lot of rules that I don't want to break it. Like it you could get shut down. You could get in trouble, you know, and they're probably fine doing it out of theirs, but I can't risk my business and, you know, not having a food license. But so that is so amazing. And I do want to say that thank you for that transparency. That is something that I have really built my business and my teachings and everything off of, is that reality of what that actually looks like and sharing that number. Like, you were making X amount in gross revenue and, you know, all of that. And then, you know, took that.
We knew it was going to be a sacrifice. So one thing that I've always asked myself when I'm up against really difficult life-changing decisions like this one is, if I don't do this, am I going to look back on this one day and wonder what it would have been like if I would have done it?
Yeah.
And if the answer is yes, I'm like, pedal to the metal, baby. We're doing it. And I don't care what we have to sacrifice. Like, we will give it up. But like, this is the purpose behind our business and the sacrifice behind our business. And I don't know if a lot of people really realize that.
No. And I think that my daughters, we love Sing Too, the song where the fox sings "It Could Have Been Me" by the Struts. Oh. Like, that's what that reminds me of. Like, I refuse to look back and be like, oh, that could have been me.
Yeah.
That to me, like, if I am on my deathbed and I'm wrapped with regret, like, I will have no regrets. Like, I will have no regrets for how I lived my life. I will have no, especially with this business. Like, and I think you're feeling the same way, that like, oh, but what if, like, I just think the regret of not doing it would be so much worse for me personally.
Yeah. And I can honestly attribute my career as a hospice nurse to that mentality. Yeah. Like, I don't see that as a wasted thing.
Yeah.
Like, I learned so many valuable life lessons that I would not have the perspective otherwise if I wouldn't have had those experiences with the people at the end of their life. And yeah, it's like reframed my whole mind.
Yeah. So one thing that I do want to ask you about, so we talked about, you know, you moved back here and then you started making the sourdough, but what about the farming piece?
Yeah.
Like, talk about all of a sudden growing wheat. Like, how did that come about? Do you buy it from your parents, or does your dad farm it? You guys farm it? What does that look like?
Yeah. So kudos to the generations that have gone before Roscoe and I that have literally paved the way for us to be able to do what we are doing, because we see and we feel how privileged we are being. We're now a fifth generation farm. And my heart goes out to you. If you're a first generation farm trying to make things work, I give you so many blessings, because we wouldn't be able to do what we're doing without that.
Pioneer.
Yeah. With them pioneering the way.
Yeah.
So my dad, Jay, he, when we were living in Honolulu, he was shipping just as gifts. Like, you need another pallet of wheat. Like, he never charged us. Wheat, if you sell it on commodity markets, you know, maybe $5 a bushel.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's that much, really. We paid for the shipping of it. And so when we transitioned to the farm, that same generosity was transitioned to us being there with being able to use farm equipment. You know, the very first spring that we came home, he had arranged for our field to be planted. So we are now renting 30 33 acres from him. Mm-hmm. And it's family trust land, but we're still paying to, yep. you know, because there are expenses that go along with that. And so, yeah, he's just been so encouraging along the way. So the farming aspect of it, it had been conventionally farmed by my grandfather before we jumped on that piece. And we're learning as we go. And there's been a lot of trials and tribulations. It's been maybe drought years. Last year, we were trying to plant soybeans and we weren't able to get into the field even to plant because
it was really wet last spring.
Really,
and then
wet.
It stopped raining.
And then it stopped raining.
For months.
Yep. And so the thing with farming is that you have to rotate your crops. And so last year was going to be a rotating crop. Soybeans we were going to be selling to a company that makes tofu, but we weren't able to do that because we weren't able to get into the field. And this year we were really excited to grow a specific variety called White Sonora, which is a really like a finer flower, and we were going to grow enough on a plot to save for seed next year. Mm-hmm. So we're going to grow seed for it.
And I know where you're going with this. I saw it.
Yep. And we got home from a week-long road trip and we came home to devastation. Yeah, we had a complete crop failure. Well, not failure. We had crops hailed out completely. My dad lost 100% of his soybeans. Corn, he still has to harvest, but that's also going to be a write-off. And it is just, it's hard. Farming is hard. Mm-hmm. Like, don't let anybody romanticize it. And there's, of course, beautiful, magical things about it in like country living and stuff. But like the reality of farming right now, if you are farming for commodity markets, it is not a pleasant reality. And not a lot of people realize that the farmers that are farming corn and soybeans, how much inputs they have into their crop, the weather is a gamble, and then the market commodity prices, mm-hmm. like they don't get to decide what yeah. they're going to be making. And so that's a lot of the awareness that I want to mm-hmm. bring to our business too, is like, I want to do this to shine a light for people that are ready to maybe do something different.
Yep.
And I get goosebumps about it too, because it's like, my heart goes out to commodity farmers right now.
Mm-hmm. And it's trying to explain to people that are not familiar with farming an example of, hey, sometimes right now the corn in our field that we rent out is probably the best the corn has looked in 10 years. But the problem is, if a farmer is having his best year of a crop ever, so are the neighbors, so is the entire state, so is the entire Midwest, which means supply and demand, the price of corn is down. So it's like, it's this tricky, like, oh, we had such an abundant crop and it's not worth anything.
It's so funny because I grew up, one of my most vivid memories as a child is sitting down for dinner at Grandma and Grandpa's house and like listening to the Linder Farm Network and hearing them like rattle off all yeah. these numbers and not even absorbing at all.
Yeah.
You know, like sometimes Grandpa yep. would like scoff or yep. Dad would be like, you know, disappointed.
Yeah.
But I never thought I would be in this position
and
to care.
To care and to also realize that, oh, hey, overnight, like your income just dropped by 40%. Heads up.
No big deal.
What?
Yeah. And what goes along with that?
Yeah.
You know, like the ups and downs of the roller coaster, the mental health of our mm-hmm. farmers too. I think it's very, very important mm-hmm. that we, you know, bring awareness to this, because
yes.
it is the reality that a lot of most farmers in the Midwest, mm-hmm. this is their reality.
What products do you offer right now?
We offer fresh milled flour from our farm.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah. So this is our hard red wheat flour. We also have fresh milled rye flour, a winter rye flour. And we also sell naturally leavened sourdough breads, loaves, focaccia, as well as naturally leavened frozen pizza crust.
Oh. Excited. My farm store should be opening in November, and Jenny lives, I don't know, is it an hour and 20 minutes away?
Yep.
Something
yep.
like that. And so I think we're going to have a standing order of around 30 loaves every Thursday at our farm. And so, you know, I just kind of did a rough poll of my customers. I'm like, how often would you want it? And there were over a dozen people that were like, I will take it every week. And then there were 20-some that said, I'll take it every other week. And then there were another 50 that said they'd take it monthly. And I kind of divided all up. I'm like, well, that's somewhere around 30 a week right yeah. there. And it's just, it's so great that this is something that we can offer. And I'm just excited.
Thank you so much for your support.
Yeah. So stay tuned. But yeah, I'm super excited about it.
One thing I do want to mention
yeah.
about the fresh milled flour
yeah.
is because not a lot of people realize, like, what's the difference? Like, why
yeah.
am I paying more for this fresh milled
yeah.
versus I can just, like, have flour sitting on my pantry mm-hmm. for X amount of mm-hmm. years even?
Yeah.
So The biggest difference is conventional flour. Most likely you have it sitting on your pantry or cupboard shelf right now. Mm-hmm. Do you know when that was milled? Do you know, like that's something I hadn't
thought
about.
I have a pack of flour in my pantry. Podcast producer Abby is standing back there laughing at me. I mean, I bet it's been in there for 3 years.
Yeah.
Like, I don't bake very much.
And that is probably the norm for a lot of people. And the reason why it is so shelf stable.
Yeah.
Well, number one, it's completely devoid of nutrients.
Uh-huh.
And it.
Which is why I don't eat it.
It's most likely completely devoid of flavor.
Mm-hmm.
So our fresh milled flour is literally milled to order.
Mm-hmm.
So we mill our flour. We don't add anything to it. We don't take anything away from it. So it is a whole food. The nutrients of wheat, I know we don't think of wheat as being nutritious because there's a lot of, people are sensitive to gluten and, XYZ. But I honestly wonder if people are sensitive to the glyphosate or mm-hmm. the pesticides or the way that bread is even made with 17 mm-hmm. other ingredients. Mm-hmm. So this has been really encouraging, the feedback on our flour, because people that have been told or experienced sensitivity to gluten can tolerate mm-hmm. our flour because it's a whole food. It has all the nutrition in it. It's fresh. So yep. we recommend that people actually keep this flour in the fridge.
Yep.
And that's another thing that I want to normalize yep. is yep. like, we should be keeping flour in the fridge.
Yeah.
We should be prioritizing foods that are perishable.
Yeah. And that's why actually when I built my house, people were like, why is your pantry so small? I mean, considering, when you're building a house, you'd think that you'd. And I'm like, well, the canned stuff, like I've got the cellar in the basement, but I'm like, I want food in the fridge. I want perishable food.
So you're prioritizing freshness over mm-hmm. the convenience yes. of just being able to put yes. it off of your
yes.
shelf.
Yes. Well, I'm going to report back to you how this yeah. goes.
And the flavor.
Yeah.
That's probably the biggest yeah. thing is that people report back and they're like, I never knew that flour could have so much flavor and how uh-huh. much it adds to baked
yes.
goods.
Yes.
So it's the terroir.
Yes.
We always joke that like wine isn't the only thing that can have terroir. Like mm-hmm. our bread has the terroir because of mm-hmm. where it's grown.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that there is an entire customer base like me that's like, yeah, I want sourdough bread, but I want to buy it from someone because I just...
Those are like, our best customers.
That's a whole other, like, I appreciate it. I value it, but I've got so much other going on. This is my podcast. I get
yep,
to swear.
Yep.
You can swear if you want to, but there's that need and that desire and I love it. Like people, I love it. Love it. So how do you explain... You just did a really good job of it, but explaining why to buy local and why that's important.
I mean, you could start for selfish reasons, mm-hmm. like wanting a product that is at its highest potential mm-hmm. for flavor mm-hmm. and nutrition and health-wise. If you're buying locally, you are eating pretty healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And for a consumer perspective, for the reason of circulating our economic dollars within our communities mm-hmm. and not to big corporations that don't even blink an eye if $100 order comes through. Like if $100 order comes through, I am stoked, mm-hmm. And I know or most likely have gotten to establish a relationship with the people that mm-hmm. are, coming through. So I also want to support them and I want to give them the best of the best that mm-hmm. we have to offer. Like we really have the backs of our consumers and we want them to experience our products at the highest potential. So I think for those reasons, yes.
Yeah. So next question, getting into kind of the business and strategy side. With my flowers, how do I price things? So say it's a wedding or whatever. I price things based on like the market price for wholesale. So like my sunflowers, my snapdragons, there is like, so they call it Boston terminal pricing, but I have wholesale orders with other accounts. And that's kind of how I know roughly how to price it. And I do have, wholesale versus retail, if it's a bouquet versus an arrangement. And so there is something to kind of base it on. I'm not just making this up as mm-hmm. I go, right? But my question is, how do you price it? Because it's not like you can go on like the commodity price of wheat
exactly.
or like, finding that balance of, especially the bread is, artisan, but how do you price this? Or how do you like tell, mm-hmm. just give me a couple minute spiel on how that actually works and how you came up with that middle ground.
I would say that we have based our prices alongside with what other artisan bakers are doing in our area.
Mm-hmm.
So roughly when we sell our loaves directly to our consumers, it's $12 a loaf.
Mm-hmm.
That considers the time that gets put into it. We do Well, I can't say that we do everything by hand now because we officially got some commercial grade mixers.
Good.
So we're not mixing by hand anymore. But, you know, if you've made sourdough, you know it is a time intensive practice. It is a science. Like my husband, I consider him a sourdough scientist because he knows his ins and outs of fermentation. And there's a lot of skill that goes along with that. And so that is also factored into it too. And when we started selling wholesale, we had to, you know, consider that $12 price. So we our suggested retail is $12 because we want people to be able to still access it. So we're making less per loaf. When you tap into wholesale markets, you traditionally or most likely are decreasing your price to give a bulk discount. And so it's about a little over $9 a loaf is what we make when we sell by the case. So there's a lot that is considered, or there's a lot that goes into that, as well as it's a lot more convenient for us to be able to bake a lot and then drop it off versus have to directly sell every single loaf. But I will say that before getting into wholesale, we really put wholesale on a pedestal. Like, this is the ultimate. Like, we need to get to wholesale. And we've learned a lot along the way. There are pros and cons to everything.
Yep.
And when you are not in control of 100% of that span when your product gets dropped off to when your consumer is experiencing that product, that's also a risk.
Because your name's on it.
Because our name is on it.
Yeah.
That's really important for us. And our product isn't like conventional bread where, you know, this bread can literally sit on the shelves or the flour.
Yep.
We recommend that we sell it out of the fridge, but it's a different ball game.
Yeah,
to and educating.
That's exactly
that.
Like when we've talked, it's not as simple as, oh, get some bread for my store. Like I'm planning on my store only being open Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, I need them on Thursday and I want it fresh on Thursday.
Yep.
And my goal is by Saturday morning, like, oh, sorry, we're sold out.
Yep, yep.
But if there's a loaf or two extra, put it in the freezer for my family, or, you know, I might have some customers that are like, understand, you know, oh, we'll buy it. But also the profit margin on it, let's face it, if I'm buying a standard 30 loaves a week, I mean, I think this is okay that we're having this very 100% real math conversation on here. But the reality of it is I'm going to profit net $90 a week on sourdough bread. Like, that's not exactly paying a ton of bills, right? Like, that's not a sustainable thing. However, it's something that I can offer my customers. They'll come in, they'll buy eggs, they'll buy jams, they'll buy flours, as long as they're doing it. But if I don't sell five loaves, that cuts into my my total. But, you know, but then my husband and I talked about it. We're like, well, if we get groceries for the week or, you know, whatever that might look like. But there's a lot of planning that goes into it. And again, like, I entirely respect the fact that your name will be on it. It's not going to be the leftovers. I'm selling it next week. Like,
it's so important for us
bread.
That people experience our product at the highest potential. And that was eye-opening for us when we partnered with wholesale markets. And you also have to realize, too, if you want to tap into wholesale markets, who you are partnering with might not be as excited about your product as you are.
Yeah.
They might not be marketing. They might not do any marketing for their brick and mortar. And so that has also been an eye-opening experience where I'm like, you know what? Like, I'm really good at marketing. Like, I'm really good at popping up and getting people's attention and like sharing our story, right? Because that's part of it. And so we for hindsight doing as good selling direct with cottage food as we are right now with wholesale.
Yeah. And I think that people, especially the perishable piece of it, and I've had clothing boutiques say that, you know, they want the flowers because it's pretty and I get it, but it's just not something that I've done because it just hasn't worked. And so for me to sell them, if I have a Venmo QR code or something like that, it starts to be like actual real costs. And it's not, if they're 3 days old and the customer gets it, that's not good marketing for me. That's not good advertising because they'll get it and they'll be like, oh, they only lasted 3 days.
Yeah,
like,
you don't want that.
Well, that's because they were how old, or they were in the sun, or they were, you know, it's tricky. It's more complicated than it looks. But
you're out of control.
Yeah.
You don't have that.
One last, and then we're going to kind of get into your future plans. But is there anything that you tried that totally flopped? that? Or, you know, is there any like big lesson, like big failure that you had or anything like that?
When I have flopped in the past, it's most likely because I've just been doing too much. Like, I am the kind of person where I just get so excited. Mm-hmm. My passion is, like, I'm multi-passionate.
Yeah.
I have so many different things. But I have heard this going into business, you need to kind of niche down.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been my learning lesson, that there's only so much of me and my husband to go around, especially now that we have two little girls. Mm-hmm. That is our biggest priority, is our family and our farm. So don't feel like you have to do everything or turn every passion that you have into a side hustle.
Don't look at me like that.
Because if you're listening, I just gave podcast producer Abby a look.
And like for me, the flowers are an example of that.
Where
I last summer did, I had 30 summer flower subscriptions, 6 weeks. And our little girl was a year at the time and trying to build this micro bakery business.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know that flowers will be in the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to be the one to do all of the work. Like, you don't have to do all of the work.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's my biggest piece of advice, or that's when I flopped, honestly.
Well, you know what? Tell you what, every other Thursday we'll switch. You bring some sourdough bread, I'll bring some flowers your way.
Yep.
Hey, we just created a new business plan. We'll just swap.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because you can only do so much.
Can only do so much. And that's what, you know, people have asked with my diversification with our farm and our plans. It's like, I am going to have to hire help. I can't, like, if I were to grow pumpkins or if I were to grow XYZ, I'm just hiring more labor. Mm-hmm. And if there is an entrepreneurial spirit farmer that wants to do something with their land and I can just buy it wholesale from them, it's probably going to be the same price in the long run, whether I'm paying for labor or paying for, you know, it's like you can only do so much.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk next about your plans for your farm.
Yeah.
What's next? And I know what's next, but.
So when we made the big decision to move out to the farm, this dream of having not only a micro bakery and flour processing facility right on our farm, but also a space for community to come.
Mm-hmm.
So we have plans to build a micro bakery where people can come. It will be open to the public. They can come and buy bread. They can come and buy flour. They can experience and learn what it means to take something like a simple grain of wheat and turn it into something nourishing.
Mm-hmm.
I have really enjoyed tapping into the educational space of our business.
Mm-hmm.
I started teaching sourdough focaccia workshops, which it sounds like we want to partner and do something like that.
Yes, I want to host them at my farm.
And so education, we want that to be a big component of what we build on the farm, as well as farm stays. A big part of why we wanted to move out to the farm was for our own mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And like, we want to help people by bringing them out to the farm and bringing people out onto the land and learning and making connections. Touch grass, get your hands in the dirt, have volunteer opportunities. So that is like the big picture. Of course, everything doesn't happen overnight, but everything starts with...
It only takes you 10 years to be an overnight success.
Well, hopefully one day you and I can sit down and have this conversation.
Exactly. Everyone will be like, look at Liz and Jenny. They're so lucky. And we'll be like, woo, I am tired.
Yeah. But that's part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's our dream for the farm. We live out in the middle of nowhere, but it's kind of in the middle of everywhere too at the same time. Like, we are about the same distance to the Twin Cities as we are to Fargo, Wilmer as to Alexandria.
Yep.
So, and I think, you know, the financial projections and the demand of agritourism, on-farm experiences, farm stays, like that is so much untapped potential that we're entering into. And I feel really grateful to be living in a time where people are wanting to come out to rural spaces, because for a long time, like in my grandpa and dad's generation, people wanted to flee the countryside to go work. But now the pendulum has swinged to the other side of the spectrum. And it's like, wow, we are sitting and we're positioned really well to accommodate this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a little more overlap of the country mouse and city mouse.
I think so too. Yes. Yeah. Yep.
And it's, you know, you can visit one way or the other. Tourism. That's fantastic. All right. Let's wrap it up a little bit with some rapid fire questions. So how about for your business, a go-to tool, app, or resource? What's been something that's been just really helpful or aha kind of helped you?
Okay, so this might be unexpected, this answer that I'm about to give, but mindset work for me has been foundational.
Yeah.
Because when where we live, everybody's doing the same thing. Everybody's growing corn and soybeans, which there's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. But it's like people get in their groove. And so we have big dreams, you and I do. Yep. And so I'm sure you've had mindset. You've really had to work on your mindset.
You have to be okay with people thinking you're crazy.
Literally,
and
yes.
And not like defending yourself and like, well, listen, it's like dream. Show and tell. Like, this is my dream. It has nothing to do with you. And I'm not yucking your yum. Why are you yucking mine?
Yep. So mindset work specifically, can I give a shout out to Be Magnetic, her podcast.
Yeah.
And I am a part of their community and it's like very like-minded entrepreneurs and sharing each other's dreams and rooting each other on. It's important.
Well, that's helpful because I just said, what is the best book or podcast that's helped you grow your business? That was my next question.
Yeah. The mindset stuff. Yes.
Perfect. Yep. Perfect. And then what is your favorite farm task?
Picking flowers still.
Yeah.
Yeah. I still grow flowers. All my perennials, I like add a little bit more every year and just to be able to pick myself a bouquet.
Yeah.
I also really love, you know, being in the bakery. Like I just genuinely love the quiet in the morning, getting the loaves out on the cooling shelf and hearing that like little cracking.
How often do you bake?
We bake for Thursday deliveries right now. Yeah. Yep. And so with everything that we have, you know, the farming aspect, the milling aspect, the baking aspect. When we have our brick and mortar on our farm,
you have to batch it.
We have to batch it. Yeah. So Wednesdays are really intense days for, you know, my husband is carrying most of the workload right now in the bakery because
so you
we
mill
have
the
two
flour.
Under two. So we mill the flour on Tuesday. We make the dough and bake on Wednesday. Deliveries on Thursday and then farm tasks in between and construction and, you know, all the things that go along with the business.
Yeah. And I would imagine that that schedule that you came up with, maybe that's what you want it to be, but maybe you're like, oh, I'd rather do it Wednesday or I'd rather do deliveries, but you're kind of at the mercy of
the retail partners.
Yep, the retail partners. Mm-hmm. Yep, that makes so much sense. And that's the same thing with how my business with weddings and now that we're really expanding and growing for other florists and, you know, kind of the timeline of all of that. And, you know, I would love my 3 days a week to not be Thursday, Friday, Saturday that our farm store is going to be open. Like, can we just be open Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday? No, we can't. And that's okay.
You're but hopefully we get a little downtime in the winter.
Exactly. So where can listeners find you and follow along?
Yeah, we are active both on Instagram and Facebook. You can find us at @FullCircleFarmMN on Instagram and just FullCircleFarmMN on Facebook. We also have an email newsletter so people can subscribe to that as well. Our website is www.FullCircleFarmMN.com.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being here.
And then,
one more thing that we got to talk about that we didn't. Her last name is Bredekin and her maiden name. Mom's maiden name was Baker.
I know.
Bredekin Baker. Like,
it was fate.
What?
I know. It's what was written in the stars.
Yeah. All right. Good. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Rutted Agritourism. If you enjoyed it, please leave a 5-star review and share it with someone who would find it helpful or inspiring. Your support helps us reach more rural entrepreneurs, dreamers, and doers just like you. You can explore all of our resources at sunnymarymeadowcoaching.com, where you'll find each episode in blog form along with free resources to help grow your business. You'll also find info on upcoming on-farm and virtual workshops, classes, and courses. Be sure to check out our monthly membership, Foundations of Peddling Perishable Products, where you'll get access to a full library of our original course content, plus ongoing support through monthly virtual meetups with others in the industry. Just click the link in the show notes or our bio to learn more. We'd love to have you join us. Until next time, keep growing with purpose and stay rooted.